this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, and for the first hour, why, they're going to be those of Ron Brown, and we're going to have a great talk with him. We're not going to take any calls, however. We're simply going to talk about what's going on in the financial markets. And Ron Brown, as many of you know, sells gold and silver coins, and he supports Radio Liberty. We support him. We think he does a great job, and I've had some personal dealings with him and been very, very happy. And we thought we'd talk a little bit about really what's going on in the financial markets. Now, everybody will remember last Friday when the market was down, I think, 360 points, opened this morning down, went down very rapidly, and then just at the end of the day, it starts coming back up again, almost as if somebody was manipulating the market. And ladies and gentlemen, I would like to suggest that they do manipulate our stock market because they're playing games with our mind, and they know that when the market is up, we feel good. When the market is down, we feel bad. And so they want, of course, at least for the time being, to get the people feeling good. Of course, they're manipulating the price of gold and silver. For many years, they've manipulated the prices of commodities. And this is really all part of a game that's been played for a long period of time. As they've done away with anything behind our currency, and we have a totally fiat money system, not only in the United States, but throughout the entire world. And, of course, our government at the present time stopped publishing the M3 figures, which it published for many years, saying, oh, well, they're just too expensive to actually put those figures out. They really don't mean anything. Even though we've had them all these years, suddenly they're of no consequence. And yet those who are calculating the M3 tell us it's running over 14%, which means we're going to have well over 14% inflation probably by next year. And certainly, but this is happening not only in the United States, but throughout the entire world. And what this does is it simply destroys the value of the savings of people who've been foolish enough to save, because it erodes the value of the dollar. In fact, the dollar, I think, is probably at an all-time low. Ron Brown, thank you so much for being with us today.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Well, where did the dollar end up? Do you have any idea where we ended up today on the market, the gold, silver, and those things that are being manipulated?
Well, the dollar was up today, as you explained. They brought the plunge protection team, or whoever it is, to come in to stabilize the markets, prop up the dollar, and of course, they ambushed the gold and silver market, and then they pumped money in to trigger a rise in the dollar market, the stock markets, and so forth. And that way, they put off the day of reckoning and keep the game going a little bit longer.
And, of course, the Pledge Protection Team is really the working group on financial markets. It was authorized during the Reagan administration so we would have orderly stock markets, but it's been used ever since that time, ready to manipulate the stock market to the advantage of the small group of people who do the manipulating. After all, if you know the market's going to go up, you can make a fortune in one day. Or if you know it's going to go down, you can make a fortune in one day. And of course, these people make a fortune literally every day. And there's a small clique of people working behind the scenes in the Treasury, the Federal Reserve, and certainly I think there's probably some of the people with the stock market, the New York Stock Exchange or others. Anyway, if anybody has any question, they can always look up the Working Group on Financial Markets. That's the Working Group on Financial Markets there. Google that in, you'll find out what we're telling you is true. But they can't let the American people know. You're supposed to think that the market is, why, it's a free market. Unfortunately, so much of what goes on today is simply manipulation, and the average individual has very little idea how our reality is created. Our minds are molded. Well, Ron, what do you see? It looks to me like versus whole that what we're involved in is something that's worldwide, that they're they're having troubles all throughout the world as far as housing prices and stability and the stability of the currencies. What's your take on it?
Well, you know, I think you hit it on the nose. Once we went away from a gold-backed currency or a currency that was backed by something that was tangible, then the whole financial system really becomes nothing more than a confidence game, in that the only thing that gives the money any value is the confidence we put in it. And what's making our system even more dangerous is, you know, a pure fiat system would be like what we had maybe under the continental dollar, or maybe what Germany had back in the 1900s. In other words, the government would just print some numbers on a piece of paper and say, this is money and you must accept it in payment of debt. In other words, using the legal tender laws. But what we created back in 1913 was a fractional reserve central banking system where our Congress abdicated its responsibility to control and coin the currency, and they turned that over to a set of international bankers who created a corporation, and of course they named it the Federal Reserve, so it would sound like it is a federal agency, and really, in reality, it's a private corporation. So instead of our government just printing money and putting it into circulation, what we actually do is borrow it from these international bankers who create the money out of nothing, loan it to us at interest, and so as year after year, as our debt structure gets bigger and bigger because we continue to spend beyond our means, we're going into debt and we have to keep paying the interest on that debt. So at some point, the burden of that debt starts to weigh down on the economy. Now, in order to keep it afloat, they have to come up with bubble after bubble to keep the system growing. And there is a limit to how much you can do that, and I think we're getting very, very close to that limit.
Well, I think that this is really so important that people understand that, of course, the whole system is fraudulent. The Federal Reserve System is not a branch of the federal government any more than Federal Express is a branch of the federal government. It is a privately owned banking system owned by the bankers, run for the benefit of the bankers. And, of course, its original purpose, when it was installed in 1913, was to preserve the stability of the dollar. Well, up until about 2005, it had lost 96% of the value of the dollar, and since then we've lost another 45% of the remaining 4%. So certainly they're not doing a very good job of preserving the value of the dollar. But, of course, the banking system is made out just like bandits. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. We were simply talking about how the Federal Reserve System is a privately owned bank. It is owned by private banks. It is run for the benefit of the banks. We're told, of course, they're there to preserve the value of the dollar. But that's not true. I mean, if you took the dollar, what it was worth in 1913 when the Federal Reserve was created, and you look at it today, the dollar is worth about 4 cents as of 2005. 4 cents of what the dollar was worth back in 1913. And of course, in other words, in 1913, 4 cents would buy you an up-to-date dollar. But since 2005, the dollar's lost another 40% of its value in reference to a basket of currencies. So the dollar is falling, and of course with that is the value of the currency that people are holding. But the average individual really doesn't understand what's going on. Assures us that certainly inflation is only 2%, and yet if you go to a university, almost all universities, why the tuition's gone up 6.5%. The cost of dental and medical care is gone up about 10% this past year. Certainly the price of milk has gone up 30 or 40%, as the price of orange juice, as the price of the meat. But of course they assure us that inflation is only 2.1%. In fact, that is of course what they're going to pay the seniors. Social Security is of course indexed to inflation, and of course senior citizens are supposed to get more money every year depending on the inflation rate. So we're all going to get about a 2.1% increase in Social Security, whereas inflation this last year was really about 11%. Really, of course, the average citizen, I don't think, wants to believe that the government would cheat the elderly. Do you think they would, Ron?
I think that goes without saying, Dr. Stan. You know, you get a 2% rise in your retirement, the Social Security, and the cost of living went up 10 to 12%. So it doesn't take many years at that rate for the average person to be just living on subsistence, and that's exactly what's happening in America. And, of course, the last 20 years we've been living on borrowed money. We've actually had a binge on borrowed money, and it was made available because the foreigners had an interest in trade with us, because the U.S. was the biggest consumer in the world, so they were willing to buy our bonds and finance our folly. And so for 20 years, basically America had a binge on borrowed money, and at the time, the foreigners had a vested interest in doing so because it helped to foster trade. But now, all of a sudden, as the interest rates have gone as low as they can, all of a sudden the bonds that these foreigners have been buying for years are starting to lose value. And so they're lining up to get out of our paper, not to buy more and more of it. And as you pointed out so many times, we need foreigners to invest about $3 billion a day in our markets just to keep the treadmill going. Yet they're now lining up and saying, "We not only do we not want to buy $3 billion of your new paper that you're going to issue tomorrow, what we really would like to do is cash in the chips on the bonds and the treasuries we've been buying for the last 20 years. So the flight out of the dollar is starting to accelerate, and it is creating a tremendous problem on the part of monetary authorities on how to keep this game going.
Well, Chris, I see that the Chinese are coming into the United States and beginning to buy up things. They're going to put up $1 billion and buy a percentage of Blackstone, this large investment corporation we have here. And the Chinese are coming in and buying up our major corporations and simply either shifting them overseas or simply shifting part of the production overseas, or even buying part of our defense industry and moving that overseas and getting all our defense secrets along with that. But how could we object to that? I mean, they hold almost $900 billion of American of money, and it's lost over 40% of its value in the last 2 years. So, I mean, certainly they have a right to feel very unhappy with what's going on, I would think.
Absolutely. In fact, there was a report that came out, for anyone who wants to look it up, it came out on, I think I got it on goldeagle.com. Anyway, it's a report by Ambrose Evans Pritchard, international business editor. And basically what he was saying is that the Asian countries in the month of August dumped $52 billion worth of our treasury bonds into the market. 23% of it, billion of it came from Japan, $14 billion came from China, and about $5 billion came from Taiwan. So there you go. If they're wanting to dump $52 billion of the bonds into the market instead of buying the $70 or $80 billion we need them to buy every month, that puts a real dilemma on our hands. You know, if someone doesn't step up to buy the bonds that are being sold into the market, then the value of those bonds would collapse. And if the value of the bonds collapse, then interest rates explode to the upside. We all know what would happen if interest rates went up from here, because, one, the interest on the national debt would eat us alive. It would destroy the real estate market, and the pension plans and everything would be in a shambles. So I think we're at the day of reckoning, where things are about to start to melt down very quickly.
And think what's really so interesting, of course, everybody knows about the housing bubble in the United States and the fact that houses just are not selling as well as they did before. That in certain areas of the country, they're having to discount them up to 30%, as they did recently in the Sacramento or Modesto area. I've forgotten which it was, but here in California, they simply put the new condominiums on the market, and a lot of people had paid up to $617,000 for one of these very attractive condominiums, and the one right next to them sold at auction within the last week for about $390,000. So you're talking maybe a 30-35% I mean, write down on the value of a home that somebody put $617,000 into, and when the house next door sells for $390,000, you've automatically lost a couple hundred thousand dollars in the value of your home if you went out to try to resell it. And large numbers of course, condominiums in this one housing development within this last week. Suddenly were sold at auction, and the people who bought them were very, very happy. The people who already had homes there were furious because, of course, the value of their investments going down. But it's not simply in the United States. It's happening all over the world. Apparently, there's problems over in England, in Europe, and the price of housing is beginning to level off or even turn down all throughout the world because, of course, there is a shortage, certainly, of credit. There's no shortage of money. They've created all this artificial money out there, and they're just looking for places to invest it. But banks are afraid to invest now. They've been lied to about, of course, these collateralized debt obligations. These bonds, which they were told were AAA, which really are worthless and worth 25 to 35 cents on the dollar. And so a lot of people are standing to lose massive amounts of money. The largest bank in the United States, Citibank, and I think it's worth $400 or $500 billion, something like that, but they've got $80 billion in these collateralized debt obligations, and of course they've got to get those off their books. You know, either that or they're going to have to sell something so that which has real value, so that they can, you know, get their books in order. And accounting firms, which in the years past had given green light to the corruption of Enron and Tyco and all of these other corporations, the accounting firms aren't letting the people like Citibank and the others get away with fudging the information, and they're insisting that the truth comes out. And Citibank has $80 billion of very questionable loans. So I mean, and it's not just Citibank; it's all over the world. All of the European banks, even the Chinese, were assured that these collateralized debt obligations made up of home loans that which were based upon subprime purchasers, that these were excellent investments, and they were lied to. And they're certainly not trusting the people who are telling them that these other obligations are very good. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
Oh, you know, we've covered that several times, and I agree with it. But the problem with all bubbles is when they first get started, they create a lot of excitement, a lot of profits. Everyone's making money. The banks that were, you know, the mortgage companies were making all these loans that you were talking about were making a fortune doing it, and all they wanted to do is keep the game going. So as the value of real estate kept going up and up and up, it started to price the average person out of a home using regular lending standards. So in order to keep the game going, these mortgage companies had to do what? They had to just start lowering the standards. And then what they were doing is making the loans, packaging those loans into what's called mortgage-backed securities, sell them to the investment community, as AAA type bonds. But as they lowered the standards, it became harder and harder and harder to market those bonds. And finally, the system thing came crashing down because of all the gimmicks they had created just to keep the bubble going. But while the bubble was going, everyone was fantastically happy. It kind of reminds me of the dot-com bubble back in the 90s, where you had people using their credit cards to buy dot-coms that never made any money, never made any product, but there was a great potential for it, and this was a new era, if you'll remember, and value had no purpose in the markets anymore. It was all based on a new market for, of course that always happens at the top of a market. They always say it's different this time, you know.
No, because this is what happened in the housing market. The houses went up in value. People could then borrow on the house. It was like a piggy bank. And every year it would go up in value and you could borrow more money on your house. And of course that's what fueled the housing bubble. And of course fueled the entire economy during the time of the housing bubble. And then of course when those values topped out and then began to fall, people suddenly found that they owed more money on their house than it was really worth in the open market. And of course, increasingly, people will be walking away from their mortgages. After all, why fund a dead horse? Well, Ron, certainly I think that we're seeing probably the very early beginning. Certainly that the beginning of the end, but perhaps the...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
Great. But the trouble is, number one, it takes 150 to 200,000 jobs, new jobs, every single month to keep employment going. And secondly, none of these new jobs, or very few of these new jobs, are good paying jobs. They're all mediocre jobs in service industry. But we're not creating manufacturing jobs. We're not creating good paying jobs. That's the big problem. And Rod, as you talk to people, certainly don't many of them express the feeling that we seem to be moving towards a lower living standard?
Well, most of the clients I would speak to are at least thinking about that, or they wouldn't even be in the market to buy gold. So they understand something's wrong. But I am always amazed at, for example, getting back to the North American Union, I've been really making that a focus in my presentations to people, because it does have a tremendous impact on the value of gold and silver, and what's going to happen to the monetary system and the ability to even own gold and silver. And so I try to explain people the dangers of this North American Union and what it implies. And after I get through my little spiel, about half of them will say, well, what effect do you think that will have on the price of gold? And I say, you're missing the whole point. If we lose our freedom, if we lose that constitutional republic, that rule of law that gave us these rights and prosperity, you will lose your fortune, you know. Who was it? One of our founding fathers, Sam Adams, I think, said, those who treasure their riches more than their freedom will lose both their freedom and their riches, their fortune.
I think that's a very, very important for people to understand. And the average American can't understand what it would be like to live without freedom. And they find it very difficult to believe that the plan is already in place for a dictatorship in America. And yet, of course, if you look at the sequence of legislation, starting with the Patriot Act and the Homeland Security Act, and then the Model State Emergency Health Powers Act, and then the Military Commission Act, and the John Warner Defense Appropriation Act, and then the authorization of rebuilding of new concentration camps and new programs for civilian labor on military camps, and then authorizing, of course, the refurbishing of the Japanese concentration camps, because, oh my goodness, we want to keep those Japanese concentration camps intact, because we never want the American people to forget how terrible it was, of course, to have put American citizens into concentration camps. But if that's really true, why have they passed all sorts of legislation like authorizing $385 million for a Halliburton subsidiary to stand by to build new concentration camps in America? Why are they keeping the older concentration camps, the closed military bases? Why have they modified them to be used as concentration camps? And why, of course, did President Bush on the 9th of May pass the Office of Homeland Security and the National Security Presidential Directives that allows him at any point, in case of a perceived national emergency, to have military dictatorship in America and to use the American military against American citizens? That, to me, is frightening, Ron.
Absolutely. You know, the powers that have been orchestrating this are just absolutely brilliant, and that we're like the frog in the water. And even the people that I talk to and work with, and myself even included, you know, we've been in this conservative battle for myself almost 29 years now, and you go through the motions and do your thing, and they're just eroding it piece by piece, but we keep surviving and getting by. But I'm getting this horrible feeling in the pit of my stomach, and a lot of my clients are too, that this evolving thing that's been going on for the last 30, 40, 50, 70 years is suddenly getting down near the climax point. And I know the Birch Society, which I was involved with when I first started learning the truth about what was going, they used to always say that they will just do it through gradualism for as long as they can, but there will be a point in time where the American people start to wake up what's going on, and at that point they're going to have to just make a mad dash for the finish line. And I'm starting to get the sense that that's where we're heading, because you see how much faster these laws and everything is coming into place. You're starting to get this horrible sense that something's going to happen imminently.
Well, I think the most frightening thing is the fact that the military is actually collecting dossiers on us all. The FBI is collecting dossiers on us all. The National Security Agency is collecting dossiers on us all. And, of course, they're tracking everything that we do at the present time. this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. We're certainly talking about what's happening financially, and Ron was expressing his concern that we seem to be moving very, very rapidly towards a police state in what was once the land of the free and the home of the brave, but it's all being justified in the name of fighting the wicked Osama bin Laden, who certainly older than the 1980s, worked very closely with the Central Intelligence Agency of the United States, which funded both the Taliban and Al-Qaeda, and anybody who doubts that needs to read the books written before the 9/11 attack, and we'll be glad to get to you the list of some of those books that you can read. In fact, we carry one now called The Devil's Game. It's still in print. The others are very, very hard to get, but you can always get them off of Amazon. People have them for sale. And they will tell you back in 1999 that this whole radical Islamic movement, Al-Qaeda, was being funded by Pakistan, by Saudi Arabia, and by the Central Intelligence Agency, creating, for all intents and purposes, the best enemy that money could buy. But we can't let the American people know that. After all, Al-Qaeda is the enemy. The Taliban are the enemy. And yet, of course, today we're funding the Pakistani government that's funding the Pakistani military, that's funding Pakistani intelligence, that has been funding the Taliban. But we can't let people put things together or remember what happened in Vietnam. When all during the Vietnam War, of course, we were funding and subsidizing the Russians, the communists in Russia, who were subsidizing the North Vietnamese, who were subsidizing the Viet Cong, who were killing American boys in Vietnam, just as today. We're subsidizing, of course, the Taliban indirectly, that is killing American boys in Afghanistan. Well, Ron, you know, Chris, let's get back, of course, to the financial considerations of what's going on today. And my understanding is that the economy seems to be slowing down here in the United States, and not only in the United States, but in some other of the countries in the world, despite the fact that there's massive infusion of new money. In fact, what's so amazing is that even in Europe, the European Central Bank is putting out 11 or 12% more money every month. And of course, when you do that, money and credit, when you do, that's going to be reflected in inflation in a year or so.
Absolutely. In fact, if you go back, Dr. Stan, I always sit in amazement and I always ask the question, if someone had asked me 30 years ago that our leaders could absolutely gut our country, send all of our jobs, all of our plants overseas to our enemy, in a sense, and throughout that whole process create the illusion of prosperity among the American people. And I'd have said that's totally impossible.
Hold that thought. Hold that right there, please. Well, this is And our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and he was just saying that, you know, if 30 years ago somebody had told him that our government was going to come up with a program to send our factories overseas, to send our jobs overseas, to flood our country with illegal immigrants to take many of the jobs in construction, and to flood our country with legal immigrants who would come here, specialists in various fields, and work for a third of what the Americans would, and gradually force our living standards down, because of course the people are making less and less money. If somebody had told Ron Brown that, you know, 30 years ago, he'd say the American people would never go for sending our factories overseas and subsidizing those companies, major companies that are sending their factories overseas and subsidizing, for instance, as we are today, the building of nuclear power plants, or guaranteeing the loans on nuclear power plants being built in China by Westinghouse. Why would we want to guarantee the loans of, I think, $5 billion that is going to be used to build nuclear power plants in Russia? Nuclear power plants in China. Why are we building nuclear power plants in America? Why are we so interested in building up the economy of China, one of the greatest miracles of all time, but all built with American and European money, predominantly American money, from the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, the Asian Development Bank, the Export-Import Bank, and, of course, the various grants from many of our major banks and corporations? Doesn't make sense, does it, Ron?
Oh, and even more importantly, how could they do all that and still create the illusion of prosperity among the American people? And see, the way they did it is with bubbles. that created this dot-com bubble, and even though you lost your job, not to worry, the value of your house was going up, and you was making a fortune in your stock market. So people created the illusion, or had the illusion of wealth, and as these stock markets went up, and as the real estate values went up, people could borrow from that, and it had a tremendous wealth benefit as this bubble just kept growing and growing and growing. Unfortunately, all bubbles eventually have to come to an end, and when they do, it's with a bust and not a small, soft landing, as our economists keep trying to say we're having. So we're on the process of this whole massive credit bubble, which has been built beyond any hope of ever maintaining it. Think of all the people, as you mentioned earlier, that have bought houses with no money down at the top of the market. Now the house is $100,000 or $200,000 less than what they owe on it. And what do the scriptures say? The borrower becomes the slave to the lender. So all of a sudden, the party that people were having, suddenly the bills are coming due, and all of a sudden they're totally incapable of keeping up with their debt.
And I think that really this is happening all over the world. Certainly America is producing a certain amount of material. And, of course, we are still a major manufacturer, but certainly the Chinese, I think, have moved up to the third or fourth largest manufacturer in the world. I'm not sure where they are now. Certainly, it's only in recent years that they've become a major manufacturer that in a few years will certainly be outproducing the United States. And this is an amazing thing, as we think that suddenly, and we're talking within probably a few years, China will be the major manufacturer in the world, and America will be dropping back to second, third, fourth, as we move away from being the world leader towards being a second-rate nation. And certainly as more and more of the infrastructure of this country is being bought up by foreign countries, as the living standards of our people begin progressively to fall, as the value of our currency begins to crumble. And believe me, with the inflation rates such as we have, there's only one way for the value of our currency to go, and that's to go down. And the American people really don't understand the implications of inflation, because we've never seen the ravages of it here. But I fear we're going to, and it's only a matter of time. Well, Ron, tell me what you're hearing from your customers. Are a lot of them, of course, getting in? Are they getting into the gold market, the silver market at the present time?
Well, absolutely, Dr. Stan. You know, you go through these ebbs and flows. When the market goes up too far, too fast, people tend to back off a little bit. And part of it is because hard for me to push people to step in and, you know, load up when the gold price, for example, is up $100 in, what, a month and a half, 2 months? So the markets go, they ebb and flow, but more and more people are starting to wake up to the fact that we're at a very dangerous stage in this whole economy, and that something's got to give here pretty quick. So people are starting to look for gold and silver as a refuge, not just as a way of making money. So I think that's important to understand.
I think that is a most important issue. We're not talking about making money. We're talking about preserving what you have. Ron, would you like to get your telephone number out and tell people about that article that you've written, about what's happening financially?
Okay, my number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561. Yes, I've put together a little packet of info. I'm not a prolific writer, but every 1 year or so I'll come out with an article. I try to write them in a timeless manner, so that as I add to them, they all tell a story like a book or something. And I think it's important that I send out the information that I was putting out 2 years ago and 3 years ago, because sometimes it might help the credibility of what I'm saying to say, here's what he said 5 years ago and here's what's happened since then. So I have that package of literature I'll be glad to send out to anyone that's interested. Putting the finishing touches on a new letter that'll be going out. In fact, I'll be bringing it to the conference next week. And as you know, the title of my speech is going to be The Bond Market, inflation vigilante or not.
All right, that sounds like an intriguing title for a talk.
I think it's the most critical thing in the future because we've watched bubble after bubble after pop. We watched the dot-com bubble pop back in the year 2000, and they replaced that with the real estate bubble. And through this whole thing, they've created this massive credit bubble. And the key to understanding is that the bond market is the foundation for our whole financial system.
Could you explain that? I think most people don't understand that we talk about the stock market, but isn't the bond market, three or four times the size of the stock market?
If not more. And then you figure the corporate bonds and the municipal bonds and the state bonds and all the other bonds. That's basically how we've financed our society and our financial system.
But of course, people put their money in, it has a certain amount of value. And then you have inflation, you devalue the dollar, and then of course when you sell the bonds, of course you don't get your money back. You get back maybe the same number of dollars, but they'll only buy a half or a third or a quarter of what the dollars that you put into it.
Well, I think the trick to understanding the significance of the bond market is to, one, understand that bond values go up as interest rates come down, and bond values go down when interest rates go up. So in the past, the theory that the bond market is a vigilante of inflation is simply this. When you go into an economic growth period and the growth starts to get out of control, you're creating excess money and credit in the system. That money goes into the market and starts to force prices higher. And as inflation rises, in other words, the cost of living starts to rise, the bond investor is not going to buy bonds paying 5% once he understands that inflation is really 10 or 12%. And see, that's our dilemma right now. They keep telling the people, I don't think they've convinced many people, but they keep telling people that inflation is running at about 2%, and as you know, it's running closer to 10 or 12%. Well, if you invest in a bond paying 5% and inflation is 10%, you're losing ground every year. So the theory has always been that the bond investor will be the vigilante that will force interest rates higher, and when interest rates go higher, it puts nips the economic growth and boom in the bud and slows it back down and creates the recession that brings the whole system back to earth. Well, what I'm trying to point out in my article, and I will be talking about in my talk, is that over the last 25 years, the bond market has failed miserably in that regard. We've seen interest come from, 15% in, let's say, 1982. Actually, it reached as high as 21% in 1980. But since 82, interest rates went from 15% all the way down to 5% amidst the greatest inflation in the history of our country. And so the bond market was totally failing to function as a vigilante to stop the insane growth of money.
But of course, this is a product of the banks that control the Federal Reserve System that have profited fabulously by being able to create money out of nothing and massively expand the money supply and use the money that they created to allow either themselves or their friends to buy up the media and buy up the corporations. And when you find that one corporation's going to purchase another for $43 billion, I mean, where is the $43 billion going to come from? It's all, of course, created through this tremendous inflationary spiral. And, of course, there's more and more money out there, but it's having less and less value because if you increase the money supply, why, of course, you decrease the value of the money. And this is what most people don't understand. And they just don't understand why the price of everything is going up now. Inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. Inflation has nothing to do with rising prices. It has to do with increasing the money supply. And they don't want the American people to know that. They want you to think that inflation is rising prices. No, prices always rise if you increase the money supply. And that is, of course, the most carefully kept secret in America today. And, of course, certainly everybody who understands monetary affairs especially the people over in Europe, have been frightened to death about the ravages of inflation because they've seen what's happened there time after time. We've only had one episode of inflation, very temporarily there in 1979, 1980, 1981. It was brought under control. And then, of course, after that, they did everything wrong. And, of course, they're setting us open for one of the greatest collapses of all time. And when, of course, the United States dollar begins to tank and it loses its reserve status, then heaven help the people who have not made proper preparation. And the point you made, Ron, was you really don't think about making any money. Just think about trying to preserve what you have. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. You know, you look back at Germany, 1917 or through 22 or whatever, and the exchange rate of the German mark and the U.S. dollar was 3-1. And the dollar was, gold was at $20 an ounce. So in 21 Germany, it took 60 German Reichsmarks to buy 1 ounce of gold. 3 years later, if you'd have left your money in the paper money, and that's what I'm trying to caution people now, as we go into hyperinflation, the value of that dollar is going to lose very quickly. Well, in Germany, by 1923, it took 60 trillion marks to buy 1 ounce of gold. So obviously anyone who had left their wealth and their savings in the Reichsmark denominated investments, in other words, the traditional investments of Germany, they lost everything. And I think we're about to see the same thing happen in the United States as the dollar is repudiated as the world's reserve currency, and then we're left trying to finance a massive debt, and there's no way we could do it except to run the printed press. And that's what we're starting to see right now.
And you have to be able to pay the interest on your bonds and things of that sort, and if you don't have the money, as you're the government, what do you do? Well, you and I, of course, can't make money out of nothing, but the government can. And the easiest thing to rather than admit what they've done, is simply to turn on the printing presses and hope that they can retire with their pensions funds, but you know, before the day of reckoning comes. The only good thing I can say is that the value of their pensions is going to be destroyed too, just like the value of the pensions of the average American, their pension fund, their Social Security, their Medicare. There is no fund. They've spent the money, and they've lied to the American people about it. And the first baby boomers began retiring in January of the year 2008. And then, of course, there's a flood of baby boomers, and I will tell you, I know a lot of people who are going to turn 62 next year, and they're going to start retiring because they don't think there's going to be any money around, and they want to get their money before, of course, it's all gone. And I think there are going to be an awful lot of people way out of proportion who are going to retire when they get to be 62 because they want to get their money, at least part of what they paid in, knowing full well, of course, that both Social Security and Medicare and this new drug financing program, there's no money to finance them. And the whole system is going to go kaput. And they're already talking about having the only thing they can do is cut back dramatically on the Social Security payments and the Medicare payments, or have some sort of a two-tiered Medicare system, one for the people who have money and one for the people who don't. And if you have money, of course, they're just going to cut back on your ability to have a Medicare system. The ultimate plan is to have a two-tiered Medicare system, one, of course, where people will have private insurance that they pay for partly on their own, and the other, of course, is the indigent care, where, of course, you never get taken care of. You got free medical care, but, of course, you never get the medical care. They just put you on the list and hope you die before you need your treatment. And I've been told that by one of the highest-ranking people within the medical division of our government many years ago when I was involved in medical politics. Well, you know, Sidney, Ron, are you seeing new people coming into the gold and silver market, or are most of these just old-timers coming back again?
I'm starting to see more and more new people that have never bought before. And even more important, before, when the new people would come in, they were watching the price of gold, and if it rallied $10 or $15, they said, well, I don't want to buy it here. I'll wait till it comes back down. And so they were just kind of price shopping. The people that are coming in now realize that we're heading towards a serious crisis, and that the main thing to do is not to think in terms of profits, but to just get on board, because if you don't get on board and this market takes off without you, you're going to get wiped out very quickly.
All right, fine. So basically, more people than people that really have not been involved with this before beginning to come in. How are they hearing about it? Where are they getting their information? You know, that they've really got to start taking action to preserve their wealth.
Well, I get a lot of my clients, obviously, from going on the air with you, but then a good portion of my new clients come from my existing clients, because most of the people that bought gold and silver 5, 10, 12, 20 years ago had been trying to educate their relatives, their friends, and as long as gold was in the doldrums and silver was going down for, you know, the 20 years from 1980 through 2001, they didn't have a very convincing argument, because people were making so much money in their dot-com stocks and their real estate. Why would they want to
hold that thought? We're going to have to interrupt you. We'll be right back here. Ron, go right ahead.
So, you know, a big portion of my clients are coming now from referrals from my existing clients, because now that the silver has almost tripled and gold has tripled in value over the last 5 years, all of a sudden it's a wonderful investment, so people are starting to wake up and take notice. But as usual, they didn't get in at $5 on silver or $250 on gold. They're chasing it here at $750, $800. And a lot of them are still thinking it's too high, so they're putting off buying, and they'll end up buying it at $2,000. So, you know, unfortunately, our monetary system is heading for a crisis, and as it does, people will be flooding out of paper investments because they're losing value so quickly, and they'll be looking for that one refuge that has always been the refuge throughout history, and that's gold and silver, because it's real wealth. It's biblical wealth. You know, it's written up many times in the Bible, and it's honest money, so...
Well, of course, I know you're stressing the importance of silver. Do you think that we're going to see silver really take off one of these days?
Absolutely, Dr. Stan. You've heard me say on the show many times that I say that not only is silver the greatest investment opportunity in your lifetime, it's quite literally the greatest investment opportunity of world history. And I say that simply because... In 1963, when Lyndon Johnson demonetized the silver, silver which had been used for our coinage throughout the world for 4,000 years, suddenly the bankers of the world dumped into the industrial market the monetary silver that had taken 4,000 years to accumulate. And we've been consuming that silver now for 55 years, and as we get down to the bottom of the barrel, it's happening at the very moment people are losing confidence in paper money anyway and are ready to seek silver as a refuge, and they're going to find out all the silver's gone. So once that news gets out, and they've manipulated the market so much with these paper contracts and paper storage plans, that once the laws of economics understand that there's not nearly as much silver in physical form as there is on the books of the Wall Street bankers, then all of a sudden there's going to be a scramble to get what silver is left, as people try to scramble out of a dollar that's becoming worthless. It's not just the dollar, all paper currencies.
And of course the thing is that there are people in other societies, like over in India, they love silver there, they love gold, they love silver. But we're in a world economy now, and people throughout the rest of the world have the money to go ahead and purchase gold and silver. And so one of these days there is going to be a shortage. Ron, we're out of time. God bless. We'll see you Saturday.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Stan.
Bye-bye. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly we hope that many of our listeners out there are already making preparations to look after themselves in the time that lies ahead. And we're heading into treacherous financial times. If you've not read my pamphlet on the history of money, you need to get that. You certainly need to hear my talk on the financial tsunami. As all the various components begin coming together, the social security of people begin to be retiring for the first of next year. The price of oil is going up. The price of homes is going down. We're finding the carry trade, which has been used to create artificial prosperity, is beginning to contract. the derivatives, this concept of these financial weapons of mass destruction, over $500 trillion of them out there across the world, and there's not that much money in the world, of course. These are guarantees that people will not lose money with their investments, but as Warren Buffett said, these are financial weapons of mass destruction, currently latent but potentially lethal, and others have said they are there. They will bring down the whole world financial system. And certainly it's the American banks who hold, you know, really trillions of dollars in these. And I'm talking about companies like J.P. Morgan Chase and other major Wall Street banks hold trillions of dollars in these derivatives. Guarantees that if somebody begins to lose money, that they'll step in and rescue them, and there's just not enough money in the world. And certainly we find the situation with the oil price going up, with the threat of a war in the Middle East, with the massive deficits we have, the massive trade deficits we have, America's in real trouble. Let me suggest you get my talk on the financial tsunami and the syllabus that goes with that. And then, of course, we think that the books, The Creature from Jekyll Island by Ed Griffin, probably the best single book on this subject. The book, the Federal Reserve Conspiracy by Professor Sutton, and then the book, Fiat Money Inflation in France. And if you can read these, you will know more than most economic professors and understand, of course, that the whole system that we're living in today is a fraud. It's all done with smoke and mirrors. And where the system comes cascading down, of course, the wealthy are going to prosper greatly, and the average individual is going to be wiped out, and there will be a few people who will survive, and we hope that many of them will be listeners to Radio Liberty, and they'll be able to help themselves and help others and let people understand, of course, how we got into this situation. And hopefully, as this whole system begins to crumble, we can begin to reclaim our constitutional system, because, of course, that is the one hope we have. We have the greatest country on earth. We have a constitution that is unparalleled, that actually by law limits the power of the government, and of course claims that the Federal Reserve System is illegal, and yet it has been implemented because the wicked people have controlled the media, and they purchased the support of the politicians. And in Washington, D.C. today, we have some of the finest politicians that money could buy. And behind everything, behind this financial scam that's going on today, are powerful spiritual forces that are intent upon using the coming crisis which they've created to bring about a one-world government, a one-world religion with the destruction of Christianity and Judaism, and a one-world ruler. And this is an age-old plan. If you've not yet listened to my talk on the forbidden secret, that's the forbidden secret, and there comes a syllabus with that, my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. If you've not yet seen the video, The Secret Mystery of America's Beginning, and the sequel to that, Riddles in Stone. If you've not heard our four-tape or four-CD set on The Secret Behind the Secret, seen the DVD by Constance Gumby on The Emergence, which takes you into this worldwide occult movement that permeates every aspect of our society. And there really are secret societies out there, and there really are secret organizations that work behind the scenes. They even have web pages, so you can actually check them out. You see, well, they're not secret if they have web pages. Well, of course, the thing is that most people have never heard of most of these organizations. Pray for America. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in a battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for this hour, they're going to be the views of Barry Shamish, who's certainly one of the most fascinating guests we have. Barry's is a Jewish patriot who spent a number of years, actually going way back even before the Rabin assassination, trying to convince the Jewish people, the Israeli people, of what's going on in their country, and the fact that Rabin, their prime minister, was killed as part of a conspiracy some 12 years ago, a conspiracy of the Israeli counterpart of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, the Shin Bet. Well, anyway, I'm going to let Barry talk to you, because he'll bring us up to date on what's happening there in the Holy Land. And you must understand that so much of what's going on in the world today centers in the Holy Land here, this little strip of land along the eastern coast of the Mediterranean, and with 6-7 million Jewish people living there. And yet this is really the center point of so much of what is taking place in the world today. With that as the background, Barry, it's good to have you with us again.
I'm always delighted.
All right, you go ahead. What are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, we're going to go back to the Giants.
All right, fine. I think that's great. I love the Giants.
Well, I'm so upset and ticked off by the normal politics of Israel right now, that we need a break here.
All right, fine. For our listeners out there, Barry had written a book called The Return of the Giants, based upon some almost supernatural events that took place in Israel from the mid-80s. When did it start and when did it end?
It began in September of 1987 at Shikmona Beach near Haifa, when a UFO blasted its image onto the sands, and it ended, well, it never really ended, but the wave itself ended, the nightly barrage of weird aerial phenomenon ended in July of 1999, and now you only have every few months something comes up, but the wave was from 87 to 99, peaking in 1993, when the wave of giant sightings, especially around the town of Kadima, hit as the Oslo Accord was first being written in March of 1993 and ending in July of 1993 when it was finished. But we're going to begin, if we may, in December of 1994, when the last incredibly documented sighting of giants took place. And by the way, when I say documented, I'm not kidding. I'm not talking about neighbors who heard rumors. I'm talking about physical evidence, filmed evidence, corroborated evidence. This is no different than the way I handle my political writing. I actually gather evidence, and as little as humanly possible, I speculate very little. I speculate when I don't have the answers and someone demands them, then I might guess. Ready music.
All right, fine. Well, I think it's really so important for our listeners to understand that what Barry is really talking about is a series of supernatural events that certainly cannot be explained by physical explanations. And certainly it wasn't just one person, but a number of people. And we have, I believe, two previous programs. As we've, Barry has chronicled what's happened. He's written a book about this, which is available, and later we'll tell you how to get that. But I think it'll be a fascinating series of programs, and we'll get these so Barry can distribute them as well. Really about the return of the giants. These are not imaginary. They're very real supernatural beings. Go right ahead, Barry.
Wow, that was a fast commercial. All righty. We're now in the town of Yitzhak It is December 24th, 1994. Now, the Yeseets was about 10 miles from where I lived in Beit Shemesh, so I was very fortunate to be there, I guess, a day or two after the actual landing. Now, here is the setting. The town sheriff, or the equivalent in Israel, the regional security officer of the town of Yeseets, is sitting at home. And by the way, Yeseets is just a little village, not far from a shopping mall at Bilu Junction, a major commercial junction, but it itself is quite isolated. Now, he's playing cards with his friend Danny Ezra. His name is Herschel Casantini. A nice guy, actually. I met him on four or five occasions researching my book and actually filming him twice. Now, Herschel is playing cards, that's all. He's at home, and suddenly both he and his friend Danny feel that the house is shaking. And both of them thought that a giant truck must have passed by, except no giant trucks come into your seats. So Herschel opens the door to see what's going on, and there standing before him is a 9-foot-tall giant. Okay, he never saw his face. He told me his face was covered in a mist. He couldn't discern the feature. The body was quite metallic. He looked at this thing. How would you like to open your door and see a 9-foot...
Well, I really wouldn't. I just assumed. But anyway, it's, this is a very believable individual, isn't it?
Oh, not only believable. The man's got an army record and a security record that's uncorruptible. But more to the point, we'll get to the evidence left behind. It's so fantastic that you have to believe him. Now, he slams the door. Okay, I mean, he doesn't want to see this thing. And he says to his friend Danny, open the blinds and look outside. Now, Danny, his friend, who I met, of course, well, he was not talking 3-4 days after the incident. He was not saying a thing about it. But he looks at the blind, he opens the blinds and looks at this 9-foot-tall creature, and he actually faints. It's not like a...
Hold that thought right there, and we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest is Barry Shamish, and he's recounting, of course, the things he actually investigated. Remember, Barry is an investigative reporter, and here's this story that's told by this very responsible police chief. He is playing a cards one evening with one of his friends. They're at home, and there's a knock at the sound of the door. He opens the door, and there is a 9-foot giant. He can't see his face because it's surrounded in mist. His body seems sort of metallic, and of course the sheriff, the police chief, does what any thoughtful person would do. He slams the door, and he tells his friend, look out through the blinds and see what you see. And so the friend looks out through the blinds, sees this 9-foot giant, and he faints. So pick the story up from there, Barry.
Yeah, it's just like in a sitcom. He was so shocked by this, he actually fainted and was revived by Herschel. Herschel looks at the blinds and sees the giant walking away robotically, with hands out and marching like a soldier, robotically moving away. Now, the next thing he does is he phones the army to send in troops. The army is not going to send troops to chase a 9-foot giant. Okay, this is, that story didn't go over well when he phoned it in, but he explained who he was. He's the Metakeh Ha'ir, he's the town security supervisor, and the army arrived within 20 minutes. Now, what they found is quite fantastic. They found 8.5 kilometers of impossibly deep footprints. Now, I took my children to see these prints. My daughter was just a baby at the time, but my son stuck his foot in these tracks. and he sunk to his knees. They were later measured. Plaster casts were taken. At the heel, it was 35 centimeters. At the sole, it was 5 to 10 centimeters. Now, sightings, actually, the TV program sightings, once again came to Israel to film this fantastic sighting. I also did a show with a crew from Vancouver in Canada. They made a whole TV documentary. It was an hour long called Giants. So I went, I guess it was 2 days, possibly three, after the incident, when, by the way, this was front page news. And I want to repeat that. These are not obscure incidents. This was a front page news story. Now, I went and I saw the tracks and I followed the tracks. At times, first of all, I jumped on the ground. I wanted to see how deep I could go. I couldn't even break a millimeter of soil. This was really very hard soil. And it was also in the winter when it gets, it's not soft like in the summer. It's full of water. So it was very, very hard to even get a millimeter. Even if I jumped as high as I could and I landed straight down, I could not get that soil. And this thing was 35 centimeters deep. Now, the estimates made, by the way, for a creature to actually go into the ground 35 centimeters, he'd have to weigh a ton. I mean, really, no exaggeration, he'd have to weigh a ton. Now, the footprints themselves highly suggested, because the sole was so shallow and the heel was so deep, that this thing was walking, well, the weight of its foot was on the heel. So either it was walking tippy-toe, or it just walked, unlike us, where the sole digs deeper than a heel, because we push forward on the sole, this pushed forward on its heel. And go try and figure it out. It's not even worth considering. That's what the tracks told us. Now, sometimes the tracks were normal human tracks. And I repeat, they went on for 8.5 kilometers to a town called Kerem Shalom, which, by the way, had plenty of UFO activity the year before. But 8.5 kilometers, I followed these tracks. Now, sometimes they were of a human gait, but sometimes they stopped, and there was a 12-foot gap between the first track and the next track. And sometimes there was a third marking. It was a round marking, let's say about 4 inches in diameter. And I guess that had to be a walking stick of some kind. Now, the Army found them. When Herzl phoned the Army finally arrived, and the Army came with dogs and flashlights, and they started following these tracks. Okay, now these are not tracks that you don't really follow. They didn't know what they were following. But they followed these tracks around 4 kilometers. Now, this story divides into two, but I'm going to go, first of all, that it made the front page of Israeli newspapers. And as usual, whenever this happens, there's always an ice cream truck. When I got there, I guess 3 days after the incident, there was an ice cream truck there. There were enough people showing up to see these tracks that there was profit being made selling them ice cream. I arrived and I interviewed Danny Ezra and Herschel Constantini, but just a moment I'm going to tell you about the two young boys who filmed the craft, the UFO over your seats that night. And it's, by the way, it is on my video, the video I sent you. It is on there, as well as a picture of the plaster cast of the footprints. It is on the video where I just have, well, right after sightings and just before Fox TV, I have about 20 minutes of Israeli UFOs. It's at the end.
Now, it's a fascinating DVD. We've seen it and fascinated by it. And there's a lot of information on there, a lot of information from Fox and from the other people who over there, this sightings program. And this is Barry, of course, has reproduced this onto a fascinating DVD about the Return of the Giants. Go right ahead.
Oh, yes. Also, if you want my book, Return of the Giants, you just go to lulu.com, www.lulu.com. Write my name where it says Sir, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, that's Chamish, and go to Return of the Giants, and you have lots and lots of pictures of these incidents. Now, the Army, the public want to know what the Army were, what it was. They arrived because of a possible terrorist incursion. They followed tracks. The public want to know what the tracks were. Now, the Army really did not have an answer for what they were following. So they brought in the Nature Reserve Authority of Israel. They figured it had to be some sort of natural occurrence. Now, this is kind of a humorous side to the story. They brought in a rep, our equivalent of a ranger, who looks at the tracks, and he tells our media, goes on TV, and says in his opinion, as a ranger, that, well, these were obviously made by a camel.
Made by a camel.
Yeah, that's what he says. He says they were made by a camel. Now, it was pointed out to him that the camel would have to be two-legged and wearing boots, and occasionally it would have to float. And he says, all right, was the camel. the next day, they, believe it or not, Israel TV is bugging this guy to know what landed in your seat or what was there. The next day, he said it was the camel. It was then an antelope, okay, because an antelope can jump 12 feet. So he decides it's an antelope. But once again, it's got to be like an antelope that decides what it wants to. It can walk on 2 feet and carry a walking stick. All right. So finally, she says something absolutely incredible on TV. He says, you know what? It was, as far as I'm concerned, it might have come from outer space. We don't know what caused these tracks. Okay? And now, the public still wants to know, this is going on in 1995 in Israel. There's still enough public pressure for the Army to finally tell the people if they were safe from something. Now, the Army had to issue a concluding, some sort of conclusion to the, look, you investigate something like this, this is not something the Army has any expertise in. The Army's final conclusion was that the tracks were made by a strange cult. Okay, it was a cult. You know, I would join this cult if I could find it.
Right.
It sounds like a terrific cult to be in. You get to dress up as giants, scare the heebie-jeebies off the town sheriff, make impossible tracks in the soil, and all for absolutely no reason. But that ended, as far as the public was concerned, the famous giant tracks of Yitzhak. Now, when I went there, I met Herschel. First of all, over time, Herschel showed me amazing stuff. After his brief encounter with this giant, he had to be taken to the hospital because one of his gonads flared up to the size of a football. Up there.
Oh, are you going right ahead?
I'll tell you about his gonad when the music stops.
All right, fine. Well, anyway, of course, Herzl, who's the town sheriff, of course, why did one of his gonads flare up? Do we have any idea?
No, but they gave him antibiotics and it went down.
All right, fine. But this is unusual. This hadn't ever happened before, had it?
I think in the history of UFOs, it did. It certainly was unusual for Herschel. It never happened to him before.
All right, fine. So basically, we're dealing with something that is totally mysterious, that cannot be explained on the basis of natural phenomenon. Maybe it came from outer space. Anyway, Barry is trying to figure this out, and, well, it's a fascinating story. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. All right, Barry, go right ahead.
Now, in this DVD, by the way, if people want this DVD, I collected all these shows, four shows from sightings, one for Fox TV. Three of the four sighting shows are very clear. One's fuzzy, but you'll live with it. And I also, out of about 20 minutes of Israeli UFOs that I personally collected, I'll let you phone me and order it if you want. My number is 904-501-7605, 904-501-7605, or you can email me, Chamish, C-H-A-M-I-S-H, at netvision, one long word, N-E-T-V-I-S-I-O-N, .net, N-E-T.io, Chamish at netvision.net.io, and I'll send you this along with a book for $20, including delivery. So you're paying about $15 for the DVD. And, well, what can I tell you? I think it's worth it. Now, I go there twice. First, I go there at night. First I went there with my kid, during the day. And then I dropped my children back home, and I went back there at night. And I discovered something fantastic. There is a family, the Sadon family, who filmed the UFO, filmed the craft over Yitzhak. This, by the way, is absolutely not knowing that Herschel had seen the giant. They've just got a UFO in the sky, and they're filming it. But what a story. And I collected some, of course.
And now, of course, this is the adjacent town. This is, what, 8 miles away?
No, it's right in Yitzhak.
All right, fine.
They're neighbors. They live a block away from each other.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
Now, and it's a small town. It's in Moshav. It's got maybe 200 people on it. Now, I collect the film, first of all. It was important to me. But the story they told, what a story. Two young children, I think one was 12, the other 13. I actually, you know, I hadn't thought of them in a while, but their names were Kobe and Itamar Sadon. And the mother was also very helpful. Now, I spoke to the kids about what they saw, and they showed me their UFO, but the mother says, you know what, my kids were a little frightened by this, but my poor dog, what it went through. And I said to her, what did your dog go through? And she says, come outside. I go outside, there is a dog lying on a bunch of ashes. Just ashes, and you never saw such a sad creature, and it was absolutely traumatized. You never saw a dog that looked so traumatized in your life. She said, you see all those ashes? And I said, yeah. She said, that used to be his doghouse. I said, what are you talking about? She said, that thing in the sky flashed. He was barking like crazy. That thing in the sky flashed some sort of light at the doghouse and burnt it up.
Well, because yeah, I mean, the story really sounds so preposterous, and yet I have no question at all that it's true. Because
it's true. Like, I remember taking home parts of a pillow. It used to lie in a pillow. The pillow was just black. It used to be a foam pillow. It was just a very hard. I remember thinking how hard this thing was.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Barry Sammis. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling about this family that lived not too far away from Herzl, the town sheriff, and that actually filmed the UFO that was over their town that night, and they had taken Barry to look at their dog, and their dog... he was laying in a pile of ashes, and it turned out that the poor dog had been out there, had seen the UFO, had started to bark at it, and they beamed some sort of a light down, and it burned up his doghouse. So here's this poor dog several days later, I mean, just totally traumatized. I mean, how'd you like to be a dog barking at a UFO, and suddenly they shine a beam of light, and burn up your doghouse? And poor dog doesn't understand that. He's just laying there, totally traumatized in the ashes of what had been his doghouse. And so continue on with this incredible story.
The patio was filled with burnt foam, okay? There was burnt wood, and there was burnt foam, and it was still, they kept it that way. The dog itself just didn't know what happened to his house. He was looking around for his house. They gave me samples to take home and have examined. And I don't know what you do with samples. I mean, they're ash. But the foam was hardened black. I guess if you burn foam really quickly, it becomes like petrified wood. It was that hard and that black.
And that was, of course, that was from the pillow that was in the doghouse?
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, their sofa was out there. Their sofa was good and burnt. Their whole patio was burnt by this thing.
Right. Okay, fine. Well, certainly, so they were looking for answers, too, and had anybody else come to see them? Were you one of the first people to come?
I was the first.
Okay.
I got to them first. I met the main characters, who were, of course, Herschel. And Herschel showed me the medical documents, and indeed his gonad did blow up. And who knows what that was all about, by the way. Really. There's all kinds of questions if they take sexual advantage of people. Danny Ezra claimed to have fainted. Maybe they took advantage of them. I don't know this, but he had to go to the clinic because something touched his gonad and caused it to blow up like a football. And Lord, if there's a breeding program in Herschel Constantini is in some way the father of some half-breed up there, I'm not sure that it'll be a very... Well, frankly, he's a nice guy, but I wouldn't want him for my father. Something happened with his gonads. Okay, just leave it at that. Now, I'm going to switch away from this. All I can say is that I got I got three. What am I saying? Also, Michael Hesseman from Germany came, and we went to Yatsis to talk to Herschel, the boys. Michael got the film from the boys as well. And Danny Ezra, who still just didn't want to ever talk about that incident. He had blanked it from his mind. So I was at Yatsis quite often. But again, it was only 10 miles from my house, and my son had the honor of being a little kid who stepped in these tracks before he knew what possibly could have caused such a thing. But now I think we should go into a subject, as long as we began talking about Michael Hesseman, and that is a very real subject, and that is a monolith, a megalith, on the Golan Heights called the Circle of the Giants. Now, this is one of the world's truly great ancient sites, and for some reason it's quite unknown. And that it's very hard for me to understand that.
In fact, I've been to Golan Heights several times. I've never even heard of it. So,
well, there's a museum in Katrine, which about half the museum is dedicated to this megalith. But you're right, there's no road leading us to it. We had to take a very tough car to get to it. Now, this megalith was built 5,200 years ago. It's older than the oldest pyramid by 500 years. It's older than the Babylonian cities. It's one of the Middle East's truly grand examples of architecture, and nobody knows about it. And I say that seriously. Now, I hear the music.
That's all right. How tall is this megalith?
It's not so much tall. It's about 6 feet tall and 3 feet wide, let's say. But it's five concentric circles. Each of them, how do we describe it? They're made out of 37 tons of loose stones. The biggest of the stones are the center tumulus. There is a cairn at the middle, topped by a tumulus. For those...
Okay, hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here with Barry. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry's telling us about this megalith that's over on the Golden Heights, and it's an area that very, very few people can get to. It's hard to get to, and you don't want to go wandering around the Golden Heights because it's all full of landmines. That's the one thing I remember when we were taking our bus trip up there was there's big signs all along the road that don't go walking on the Golden Heights because it's full of landmines. So anyway, there's one place there. There's a museum, and it has this ancient megalith that's over 5,000 years old. So go ahead, Barry.
Well, look, this is not a small megalith. This thing is 155 meters in diameter. It's got five concentric circles, and you walk through it. It's really quite a walk. In the middle, if you don't know what a cairn and a tumulus is, don't worry about it. You can step into the middle and go down, and you're surrounded by loose stones that have not moved. The cairn is 5,200 years old. 1,000 years later, an actual burial structure was created in the cairn. It's called a tumulus. And believe me, I didn't know these terms before I visited this megalith. So don't feel hurt if you don't know what a cairn and a tumulus is. Just look them up. Nonetheless, I introduced this site to several magazines worldwide. I wrote quite an article on it. It was also on the internet, and it's also in my book, Return of the Giants. Now, you have to understand, this is a huge site. It is also surrounded by 8,200 dolmens. Now, dolmens are all over France, and there are some in Scotland and Ireland as well. What they are mounds of rocks put up for, frankly, nobody knows why. A few were used for funereal services. There were bodies in them, but mostly not. And some of the stones weigh up to 50 tons. And 50 tons is a mighty big stone.
Especially if you're moving around, 5,000 years ago. They didn't have caterpillar tractors or cranes or things like that.
Oh, yes, they did.
Did they really?
No, I'm joking.
All right, fine. Go ahead.
I mean, they might have. I don't know how else they moved this stuff. Now, remember, 37,000 tons of loose rock went in to make these five concentric circles. There are two openings in the Circle of the Giants.
All right,
and by the way, that is the name of this megalith. Traditionally, it's the Gilgal Rephaim, because...
Hold that thought. We're going to be back in just a moment with Barry Shamis. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Barry is telling us about this amazing megalith over there, and it is on the Golden Heights, and it's known as this is a monument they talk about to the Giants. But before we do that, Barry, I want you to get out your telephone number and tell people once again how they can get your books, how they can get your DVD, and this one on the Return of the Giants is fascinating. Go right ahead.
Well, you're going to be really sick of it by the end of Thursday. That's this week's preparation, but what the heck? Return of the Giants is at www.lulu, like the cartoon character, lulu.com. It's an internet publishing system, and write my name, Chamish, where it says search, and you'll get to my books, and you'll order Return of the Giants. It's not expensive. I think you can download it for $9, and they'll send it to your house for $18. It'll get there within a week. My website, which, by the way, this material is on my website. My website is political, but nonetheless, it's called the Barry Chambers website. If you write BarryChambers.com, you'll get there. I will let you phone me for this DVD. Why not? 904-501-7605. That's 904-501-7605. And if you want to write me, Chambers@netvision.net.il. That's Chambers@netvision.net.il. Now we get back to Gilgal Rephaim. It has always been called the Circle of the Giants because it ain't call it legend, if you will, but the legend is that these circles were built by the ancient giants. And I want you to know that this is not so crazy as it sounds, because the Golan Heights in ancient times, in the time of Noah and in the time of the Bible, was the land of Bashan. And Bashan had a giant king whose name was Og. And, well, Og was buried, and he was so big that his bedstead, which was 13 feet long, was actually kept in an ancient museum, and that is mentioned in the Bible. So, let's go back to the Circle of the Giants first, before we look at who and what may have built it. Now, I took Michael Hesman up there with the actual curator of the museum in Katrine, and he, you know, I got him a first-class expert to take us to Gilgal Rephaim. Now, the first thing, there are two on the what should we call them, gaps in this wall. And remember, it's loose stone, this wall. It's been that way for 5,200 years. And no one has taken it down. Don't ask why. It's the Stonehenge of the Middle East. It's as good as Stonehenge, and it's got, if you count the dolmens, which may or may not be connected to the Gilgal Rephaim, there are 8,200 of them on the Golan Heights. Then this, as an archaeological site, is much bigger than Giza. I've been to the pyramids, and I'm telling you, the stuff on the Golan Heights is a lot bigger than the site of Giza. Yet no one knows about that. The Israeli government, of course, in all its wisdom, doesn't even organize tours to this place. And the curator of the Katrin Museum says because the Israeli government is shy about the Golan and they don't want to cause international incidents. Oh, that is the silliest thing I've ever heard.
Well, I know, certainly when I've taken a tour to Israel, they've taken me up in the Golan Heights, and I can stand on the top there and look down at Damascus in the distance. So that's a pretty, pretty shallow explanation. You have to ask yourself why they wouldn't want the tourists going to such a significant site.
Darn if I know, but there's a whole museum in Katrine with half of it taken up by this Gilgal Rephaim. So the people there are very proud of their site, but nobody, again, goes there. And believe me, if you've been to Israel two or more times, enough with the Western Wall Masada already. You want to see something unusual, and that is plenty unusual. But there's a real... Now, first the openings. One's in the northeast, one's in the southeast. I gathered together all the writing and research on the site I could find. And when it was built 5,200 years ago, the southeastern, let's put it this way, the sun would rise on the day of the summer solstice, and it would, as it rose, there would be a streak of sunlight from the gap to the middle cairn on the summer solstice 5,200 years ago. So that appears to be the reason for the gap in the southeast. In the northeast, on the same day that the of the summer solstice, the northeast would be facing towards directly towards the constellation, the star actually, Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky. And people, this is complicated, but the site Gilgal Rephaim was next to a town called Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth. In Canaanite was the god Venus. It was the god of both love and war. The Hebrew name Esther comes from Ashtaroth. Whatever the meaning of this site was, there were a lot of star imagery, a lot of star images around that megalith. Now look, you have to understand about building this megalith. 5,200 years ago, well, any time, first of all, nobody was building anything in the Middle East. The simple little herdsmen who were living on the Golan Heights, never moved a stone. They would have, to get 37,000 stones in five concentric circles and to measure the stones in such a way that on the summer solstice the sun comes through them is really quite a demanding task, and the peasants who lived there didn't do it. Never is there a record of them engaging in such a project. Now, secondly, what was it built for? The curator of the museum said if it was just an issue of getting sun, of just telling when the summer solstice was, you could have saved a lot of time and money by just putting a stick in the ground and a rock. So what would you build this thing for?
Now, because you'd bury the Stonehenge in England is designed around the solstice. Certainly the Georgia Guidestones in Georgia are certainly aligned perfectly with the stars. Certainly the Great Temple of Giza and the temples in South America are all aligned, you know, perfectly north, south, east, and west with certainly, you know, their holes drilled in them so you can look at the North Star or at Sirius. And Sirius is a key to so much of what's going on from the point of view of astrology. So, I mean, 5,200 years ago, there were obviously people who were studying astrology at that time, as well probably as astronomy.
Well, this was 5,200 years ago.
Right.
Well, you know, Stonehenge, they now believe, was a motel. It was divided into rooms, and you just stay there. I'm kidding.
I know you are, because I've looked into the Stonehenge, and of course all of these things fit in together. There is this mysterious force that was out here, you know, thousands of years ago, when the Temple of the Giza was built, what, about 4,000 years ago?
You got me. Giza was 4,500 years ago, was the first pyramid.
And, of course, there's a secret society in that area. The Druze live in that area, just a little north of there. And their secret society has been around for thousands of years. We don't know too much about them, but they're very unusual people.
I'm trying to think. The first step pyramid, I believe, was 4,500 years ago. And I think the Giza pyramids, as the pharaohs died, I think Ramses II. You know what? Don't confuse me. this is... I know Israel, and I'm not the Egyptologist.
All right, well, let's get back to Egypt. Let's get back to this monument there on the Golden Heights.
These things predated. Nobody knows what this stuff is for. And I spoke to experts. They have to guess. They all are guessing. Every one of them have a different theory. And also, now here's the big one. When you walk through them, you don't know that it's magnificent. You're walking through a bunch of circles. There's grass between the stones, and at the end there's this hillock, which is the cairn. You can only be, to be really, and only, the only way to see it is from the air. It's that simple. You cannot see the beautiful concentric design except from the air. Now, this is another mystery. Why would they build this thing if you can't appreciate it from the ground?
Well, maybe they were appreciating it from the air.
That's what some people think.
5,200 years ago, which it sounds pretty crazy, but then we live in a world where there are a lot of mysterious things going on. So pick up the story there. What is the connection between this megalith to the giants and the sighting of the giants?
It's the only ancient building. It's not a building, whatever the thing. Again, when you ask for interpretations, as I say, it's a motel. You know, for all the difference it makes. I don't know what it was for. None of the archaeologists agree on anything. Nobody knows why somebody gathered together the forces and by the way, making loose stones stick together is quite an engineering feat, and it isn't found anywhere but on the island of Malta and in Zimbabwe. This is not something found in the Middle East. For some reason, the Golan Heights had immense significance to people with tremendous intelligence and the ability to make megaliths out of loose stones 700 years before the first pyramid was even attempted. And this is in Israel. It's in the Golan Heights. And for some reason, nobody goes up there to see this thing. It's one of the great wonders of this planet. This is what the curator of the Katrine Museum told me. He said, all we would need is a hot air balloon so people could look down on this site, and it would be one of the great sites of the world. And then he showed me pictures of this site from the air. It's a magnificent site. And again, now this gets tricky about who built it. It was not the peasants, the goat herdsmen, the shepherds of the Golan Heights 5,200 years ago who built this megalith. They didn't do things like that. It was someone else.
And the question is, who?
Well, legend has it that it was the giants, the Rephaim, which is why it's called Gilgal Rephaim, the circle of the giants. And if I went to a couple of rabbis who know their stuff, and one, Rabbi Herzog of Jerusalem, Orthodox, very stern in his belief, said it this way. He said, you have to understand that there were Nephilim in the Bible before the flood, and then after the flood, there are more Nephilim. So if God's purpose was to wipe out the bad stuff, he did a very bad job because the Nephilim came right back. And he said that has stumped biblical scholars forever. And our oral tradition has it that the king of Bashan, Og, was a stowaway on Noah's Ark. And when Noah's Ark finally landed, he had his way with Noah's daughters and produced the Anakim or the Zamzumim or the Rephaim. The giants came back to haunt biblical Israel. And if Noah, in fact, didn't have a giant aboard, where did they come from?
And, of course, the other question is, of course, we're told, of course, when Moses sent these spies into the land of Canaan, they came back and they said, we can't go in there. You know, there's giants in the land. And says, apparently there were giants. In fact, that we hear the story of David and Goliath, and Goliath apparently was a giant of some sort. So there were giants in the land there, long after the flood.
I've read the passage in the Bible in the original Hebrew. In fact, during the high holidays, there is that passage where they mention the Anakim and the Rephaim and the Zamzumim. There's no emotion whatsoever. They just said they were a great man of the past. They call them great. Their deeds were great. There was a fear of them that they were mighty warriors. But there's no question that in biblical times, up until David sent his nephew Jonathan to kill the last giant who had six toes and fingers, up until then, they were part of they were a fixture in the populations of the Middle East, referred to quite often without an ounce of emotion.
But, of course, the thing is, of course, in the original biblical story, Barry, these were, of course, the offspring of these demonic beings or fallen angels who came down from heaven and of course, had relationships with women, so they were not really human. They were humanoid, and they were the giants. They were the offspring of the union of these supernatural beings with women.
Well, this is why I wrote this book. When I wrote Return of the Giants, hello?
You go right ahead.
I heard a buzz. Who knows what it's from. When I wrote Return of the Giants, I had to go looking for records of giants in Israel. There is nothing. But before the book of Judges, before David sends Jonathan to kill the last one, there is, well, that was the last time there were any giants recorded in the Middle East, in Israel, in Palestine, wherever it was, whoever owned it, there were no more reports. So why did they come back in 1993? And I think I should mention the incredible story of... Well, there's one story from Kadima I haven't mentioned. Now, for people I'm not going to repeat the whole story. We did that a few weeks back. But there's a story from a town of Kadima where four giants did land. In the midst of... Oh, I hear music.
You're right ahead. I'll tell you when to stop.
In the midst of the giant landings, there was a remarkable incident at a place called Moshav Porat, which is less than a mile from Kadima. Now, Rachel Guetta and her husband, I believe his name is Yitzchak. Rachel was a very attractive, nice lady. I liked her a lot. They wake up one morning, and they go to their dog, and their dog doesn't have eyes. Someone cut out its eyes. And it lived for another half an hour. But they were shocked that someone would come to their moshav and cut perfectly their dog's eyes out. So they go to the chicken...
Well, we're out of time. Hold just a moment, Barry. We'll finish it up in just a moment here.
Gotcha.
Go right ahead.
How much time do we have?
We got 3 minutes.
Oh, Lord. I'll do it very, very quickly.
All right, fine.
She goes to the chicken house, and all the chickens are dead on their roosts. They haven't moved. It's not like there was a fox in the chicken coop scaring them. They were dead on their roosts, like someone had gassed them all and stunned them. All the chickens were dead. They go on to their sheep pen. They've got three sheep. They're all dead. But more than that, these are your standard cattle mutilations with the cheeks shaved and a hole dug to the sheep bone. And then, as we have spoken of before, there was the round circle, 15 meters in diameter, with the strange shards and the strange oils right beside this carnage at the farm of Rachel and Yitzchak Guetta.
And, of course, what you're really thinking of is that one of these space vehicles has landed, one of these UFOs.
Well, that's where the other witness of Kadima certainly saw the inhabitants. Now, what this all means, are you kidding? You think I know what this all means? I just conducted a very intense study, which led to a bunch of TV shows and a book. But believe me, I still have not got the hang of what this all means. And as I said before, as far as I'm concerned, Stonehenge was a motel, and until they tell me different, that's the way I'll see it.
All right, fine. Well, the thing is that there's some things that we cannot explain from a rational point of view. And if we can't explain them rationally, then there must be another explanation. And this is something, of course, that I've been studying for 45 years, and I finally think I'm beginning to get the realization that there really is another dimension there, and there really are these beings that come from the other dimension, and, of course, occasionally they're seen. And I believe UFOs are not from outer space. I believe that they're manifestations of another dimension.
I agree. It's better than them flying 10 light years away to come and put this impossible circle of loose stones on the Golan Heights. It didn't make sense to build it. That's the whole point. It was too many man hours for so little purpose.
But it has a purpose. We just not, at least I'm not smart enough to figure it out any more than I'm smart enough to realize what the real purpose was of the pyramids in Egypt and in South America and the American Stonehenge. And even the American Stonehenge and Elberton, Georgia, but that's for another time. Barry, God bless you. We'll look forward to talking to you, I guess, Tuesday morning.
I think it's Thursday.
Maybe it's Thursday. Bye-bye. God bless.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I hope you've enjoyed our conversation with Barry. I know I always do. And we are living in exciting times. Because I really believe that there is another dimension there. I believe you cannot understand anything going on today unless you understand that there really are supernatural forces that are at work, and their goal is to bring about a one-world government, a one-world religion, and a new world leader. And of course, gets us into this whole idea that there are people out there, and there have been for thousands of years, going back to the time of Nimrod, which is over 5,000 years ago, that, of course, actually believe that there is another God. And, of course, that is the God who rules this earth. And they believe that we worship the wrong God. The Christians, the Jews, worship the false God. They worship the true God who has tremendous power. And don't ever shortchange the power. They have the ability to levitate. They can levitate great stones. I actually have one of my friends who told me that they had a man coming to visit them who is satanically possessed. And they're sitting in the living room and they're describing this man levitating out of his chair. There really are people who can do this sort of thing. They're playing games with our minds, but these things really do happen. There is a supernatural element. Those of you who have never heard our 4-tape set on the supernatural really need to get it. Our interviews with Johanna Michelson, and then, of course, we hope that you'll want to get her book, The Beautiful Side of Evil. And it's written from a Christian perspective of a woman who is deeply involved in the supernatural. The 4-tape or 4-CD set, The Supernatural, will help you to understand what is going on in the world today. And the book, The Beautiful Side of Evil, another book called Hostage to the Devil, written by Malachi Martin. It was my first introduction to the other dimension. We have a 4-tape set of my interviews with Malachi, where we only just barely touch on this subject, mostly about geopolitics, but the wisdom of Malachi Martin goes right along with the book, Hostage to the Devil. And then, of course, we have a 4-tape set on Aleister Crowley, and people must understand who this man was. He too had supernatural power. You need, of course, to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. I talk about Colonel Edward Mandel House, who was the man who controlled both President Wilson and Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And Colonel House had supernatural power. He could control the minds of people. And there really are strange people out there who are able to use supernatural power. But, of course, this is something you do not want ever to try to tap into. If you've not heard my talk on the Forbidden Secret, you really need to get it. And that's a DVD of a talk we gave. And that, of course, is a syllabus that goes with it that introduces you to the angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. The angel who rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm. President Bush used that phrase twice in his first inaugural address, and I dare say most Americans have never even contemplated and asked, who is the angel who rides in the whirlwind? And because if you look at the Bible, of course they're talking about it is God. It is the Lord, the word God we worship, of course, who rides in the whirlwind and directs the storm. So who's the angel that they're talking about? And, well, there's so much more. You really need to get our three pamphlets on the occult hierarchy. It's my culmination of my newsletters and some written by Dr. Dennis Ketty, who's certainly one of my favorite researchers, a good friend, with a wealth of information on this aspect that nobody wants to talk about. There is a supernatural out there. People can get in contact with it. Oh, you need to get our 4-tape or CD set on the secret behind the secret. But ladies and gentlemen, we only want you to know about it. We do not want you to try to tap into this because it could cost you your eternal soul. Understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle being waged on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield, a battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you.
Tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.